And welcome to another edition of this week's Detroit Sports Week on the Tom Green Podcast. Yours truly once again hosting solo to start, and then we have a guest on the show to talk Lions Seahawks, Cameron Derby. That was a fun interview, and you'll get to hear it in just a little bit. But besides the point, we'll start with the Detroit Tigers. We'll get right to it. Once again, another week, another bit of a disappointment, but again, this team is not expected to make the playoffs one or go anywhere besides that. So a 3-3 week for the Detroit Tigers, capped off by a victory over the Cincinnati Reds to salvage one in that three-game series. Matt Vierling hits a grand slam to put the Tigers on top. And that's how it is. 8-2 was the final for the standings. Once again, we do not gain any ground in a 3-3 week. 67-79 stand the Tigers at this point. 9 games back of the Minnesota Twins, who are 76-70. But we can say this about our Detroit Tigers, and that is 67 wins is one above last year's 66-96 record. So you got to look at it this way, fans. At this point, every win from here until the end of the season is a step closer than where we were last season. Of course, last season was a disappointment, finishing 66-96, but again, improvement is what's needed, and Scott Harris, if you want to put it in this way, has done his job. This team has improved from last year. Whatever win they get. Now, if they lose out, God forbid, it's still a one-win improvement from last year, but still, they are an improved team from last season, and the numbers have proven it. Now, are they where we want to be? Absolutely not. We want to be back into winning the Central years in a row like we did under Jim Leland. We still want to go back to the World Series for the first time since 2012. We still want to get there, but improvement has been made, and that's all we can say. Now, something that needs to be improved, of course, running on contact with less than 2 outs. I mean, how many times have we seen it in the past week and in the past month since I've restarted this show that we've seen a Detroit runner get thrown out at home because they ran on contact on a ground ball? Runner on third, less than 2 outs. How many times have we seen that? Far too many to count. In fact, I don't have the stat in front of me, but it's far too many to count, okay? So maybe that strategy needs to change, and that comes to managing. Here's where I'm criticizing A.J. Hinch. Sure, you're running on contact, but each time a ground ball and the runner's easily thrown out at home plate. Maybe that needs to change next season. Maybe that does. Just a word of advice from the Tom Green Podcast on the Detroit Sports Hour. So player of the week is a pitcher this week, and it's somebody that's been underrated the past few weeks. I mean, on the first edition of the Tom Green Podcast, when we started, Reese Olson threw a dud against Tampa, but a stud against Minnesota, and we named him Comeback Pitcher of the Week. I'm going to name him Player of the Week this week, and it's because in the 2 starts that he had during the week, and we'll go ahead and throw in the last start that he had September 2nd during Labor Day weekend. Against the White Sox, 7 innings, 4 hits, no runs, one strikeout, which a little discouraging on the strikeout perspective, but he made up for it in the next 2 starts over the last week. September 8th against the White Sox, 6 2/3, 2 hits, 2 earned runs off a home run. And this past start just today, Thursday, 6 innings, 2 hits, 1 earned run, 1 home run, 7 strikeouts in the matchup against the Reds, and 5 strikeouts in the second matchup against the White Sox. Looks like Reese Olson is improving, and it looks like Reese Olson wants to make his case for that spot in the rotation next season. Because at this point, every spot is up for grabs. No spots should be guaranteed except for Eduardo Rodriguez if he wants to come back, which, God forbid, if he does not sign his contract, then it will be a wasted opportunity for Scott Harris. Plain and simple. I think he's going to re-sign because he said it himself that he loves Detroit. Okay? He said it himself he loves Detroit. But if he does not re-sign with Detroit, then a lot of problems are going to happen. So that's a conversation for down the road. But we've criticized Hinch's strategy on running on contact on a ground ball. We've seen it too many times. Reese Olson's the player of the week. And as far as the rest of the season goes, we hope to just serenade Miguel Cabrera into retirement, and we'll see what happens. I have a sneaky suspicion he might play one more year, but it really truly is looking like this is it, and I will be at the last weekend of Detroit Tigers baseball with Miguel Cabrera, Saturday against September 30th against Cleveland. I will be in attendance for that to see Miguel Cabrera hang it up as a Detroit Tiger, and we'll see what happens there. So besides that, that's our Tigers talk for this week. Now focusing on Michigan. I've said it before on this show. If you're picking against the spread, Michigan is probably the toughest team to pick because, once again, a non-conference game that they should be dominating and destroying their opponent, they do it, but lightly enough to where they don't cover. Michigan was a 30.5-point favorite against UNLV. They win 35-7. 28 points, that does not cover the spread. But a few things to note. J.J. McCarthy once again continuing his uphill climb. He threw for 278 and two touchdowns. That's a very solid stat line. 22 completions, so nothing to complain about there. Blake Corum, 80 yards and three touchdowns. Okay, maybe we wanted to see a little bit more Blake Corum, but again, Jay Harbaugh and Mike Hart coached this game to where once the game was in hand, Michigan, you know, they just got some reps from the second strings, which is fine. Roman Wilson continues his dominance, 89 yards and two touchdowns on four receptions. So, again, you don't necessarily want to call it a ho-hum Michigan win, but that's kind of what it was. I got to attend the game and meet CBS sports reporter Jenny Dell, somebody I've wanted to meet for a lot of years, and I finally got to do it, and I'm hoping that at some point Jenny will come on to the show. She had told me to reach out at some point, and I'm hoping that happens. So shout out to Jenny Dell. Glad I got to meet her. Glad I got to check out a Michigan win. And side note, I picked up a nail in my tire. Thankfully, I got it fixed. I got the alignment fixed, and that's all good. But yeah, there was not always does a Michigan game or one of my excursions go exactly the way I want it to. But in that case, it went the way of a nice Michigan win. I got to meet Jenny Dell, and I got a nail in my tire. Thankfully, all is well, all is good, and we're here talking about Michigan football once again. Now, next week, a preview against Bowling Green. I mean, the script pretty much is going to write itself. Michigan's a 40.5-point favorite against the Bowling Green Falcons, at which coming into this game, Bowling Green had a 10-point loss to Liberty and a 38-15 victory over Eastern Illinois. So there isn't a whole lot that's impressing me about this Bowling Green team. Should Michigan cover this spread? Yes, they should. Are they going to cover this spread? Probably not, because the first two games, they should have covered the spread against East Carolina. They did not. They should have covered the spread against UNLV. They did not. Sharon Moore expected to coach this game. Again, I think the Wolverines will be fine. There will be some petty concerns, of course. I've seen a lot of, oh, we should run the ball more. JJ's doing fine. I'd like to see a little bit more Blake Corum in this game, but again, you don't want to see injuries. Just get through this night game without any injuries, get a nice victory, and move on to Big Ten play. Not a whole lot that can be said besides that. Michigan should be fine. It would be nice to get a shutout, and let's hope that it can happen against the Bowling Green Falcons. But even if the Falcons do score, the first-string defense for Michigan has not given up a point. The 10 points that this team has given up have been against the second and third stringers in games that have been decided. So a shutout would be nice, but again, if Bowling Green scores, it's going to be against the second string or third string in the fourth quarter when most people are starting to file out of the stadium, which is a night game, and that's pretty much the only thing that's drawing attention to this game is that it is a night game. Again, Michigan, a 40.5 point favorite. I expect probably a 38-7 win or 38-3 win or something like that, to where, again, they'll come up a little bit short of covering the spread. But again, don't necessarily bet Michigan on the spread. I haven't on the money line. Well, it might not even be worth betting that either because it's so juiced up. I believe Michigan's at least 500 on the money line, if not in the thousands. If not, it's four digits on the money line. So, again, Michigan should be fine. They'll get a victory. And the focus will be on Big Ten play next week. In fact, DraftKings does not even have a money line listed for Michigan. So that should tell you that, in fact, the first quarter is the only thing that's listed. It's a minus 4,500 to Michigan. So that should tell you that Michigan, I wouldn't even bet the money line in this. It's a game I would avoid. As for the spread for this week. So because we have a guest on the next segment of the show, that's kind of where I'll end it. I'll make a little bit of an addendum here on the end of that show is that I shouted out Kelly in Vegas a couple of times because we talked about Jaxon Smith-Njigba for the Seattle Seahawks as well as one of the pick'em games where her Kansas State Wildcats. I just wanted to mention that. I forgot to mention on that portion of the show that unfortunately she lost her French Bulldog Coco. Undisclosed what exactly happened. I'm not going to get into the specifics of what happened. But unfortunately, her dog has gone into doggy heaven. My thoughts go out to her, as well as a little shout out to Erica Jones as well. Cameron and I, a little mutual friend there, as Cameron works at KEZI, and Erica once worked at there as well. So a little small world there, isn't it? So we hope that you enjoy that segment of the show just after the break. Next week, we'll be back in Better Than Ever with a little Michigan Rutgers and Lions Falcons previews, as well as more Tigers talk. The Red Wings are starting to get into action with the some of the youth players playing tonight against Dallas. I'll have a little bit more Red Wings talk as we get closer to the regular season starting as far as that goes. So hope you enjoyed the segment of the show with Cameron. And this has been another edition of the Tom Green Podcast, Detroit Sports Hour. Have a great week. And welcome to this segment of this week's Tom Green Podcast. We talked about the Wolverines, we talked about the Tigers as much as we could. The Red Wings are about to get in action as well with some prospects up in Traverse City. But besides that, we're here to talk some Lions Seahawks with KEZI's Cameron Derby. Cameron, a pleasure to have you on the show, and glad that you got back to me when I reached out. And all is good in the world, so welcome to the show, Cam.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Yeah, anytime I get a chance to talk about Seahawks football, you know, I'll show up running. Yeah, despite what happened last week with the Seattle Seahawks, it's gonna be fun. We got a good game in front of us with the Seahawks and Lions, so I'm excited to talk about that. And thanks for having me from all the way over there on the other side of the country. I
appreciate it. Absolutely, and so you're a believer in they write me off, but I ain't right back. Is that what we're saying here?
You know, it's funny because I'm a journalist at heart first, but I grew up as a diehard Seahawks fan. That was the team that I obsessed over as a kid. The first professional game ever that I went to, my dad took me to a Seahawks game. I was probably 4 or 5 years old. One of the last years that they played in the Kingdome before Lumen Field went up. So I was very excited about the throwback jerseys, as you can see on the wall back there.
There's
Tyler Lockett sitting back there. But I was one of the people that was very, very upset that Russ had been let go. And I was I think I spent all of the last offseason just fretting and pouting and being a baby. And then Geno had one of the best years of, you know, probably the best year of his entire life. And now I am 100% a Geno believer. I think it took me about 3 weeks to get on board, but I'm on board for life now.
So let's just double check. You do not do high knees in a plane. Is that the thing here?
When I board 5 a.m. flights, I'm usually one of the people that's like, just put your bag in the overhead bin, sit down, and go to sleep. You know, that's what we're trying to do on the airplane. No, I have a special place in my heart for Russ. I'm not one of the people that has any sort of like, I just don't have any animosity towards him. He was my favorite player that I watched throughout my entirety of Seahawks football. I still got a jersey. It's hanging up over there. It's been retired from being worn until he comes back, but it is up, and I don't know if he'll ever come back, but he was one of my heroes growing up. And I think that the two sides just didn't work out with each other, and it was time to move on. It was either going to be a quarterback or a coach, and they had to choose, and here we are. So wish him the best of luck over there in Denver.
Absolutely. So it was kind of lost what I was going to have to say there. It happened. So anyway, moving to this Lions-Seahawks preview last week. I mean, Detroit, we'll start with Detroit. I mean, I talked about it a lot on my show last week, but I'll give it to you straight, my friend. I mean, I did not expect this at all, that Detroit would go into Kansas City on championship banner-lifting night and beat the Chiefs. I mean, they did not play their best game by any means. I mean, they had some trouble. They had some trouble with the pass, a little bit of trouble with the run, but they were able to do enough to win that game and stop Patrick Mahomes, who had to throw to, probably about 10 different receivers. One of them might have been named Cameron Derby. The other one might have been named Tom Green. I mean, Patrick Mahomes was finding so many different receivers, it was crazy because Travis Kelce was out. And it has nothing to do, of course, with what's going on with Taylor Swift, which I will say that I am 1,000% happy that this happened, because I've been in certain situations like that where, you know, you get stiffed and you hope that something happens down the line. But thankfully with Travis Kelce, something did happen. But besides that, Detroit, of course, I go on a few different tangents on the show. Detroit didn't play their best game, but they beat the Chiefs, and the hype, I'm telling you, is real. How do you see the hype, and how do you see last week's game?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'm upholding a promise that I made on TikTok. Last year, I begged and begged and begged the Lions to beat the Packers so that the Seahawks could make the playoffs. And Seattle didn't do anything with that playoff opportunity. But part of my promise was that if the Lions went on and beat the Packers, I would not say anything negative about the Lions in any public light for an entire year. So I am on the Lions train this season. I am upholding this promise. I predicted the Lions to beat the Chiefs in week one. I didn't predict it to go the way that it did. I think this game was a lot more reflective of the Chiefs playing poorly in situational football than necessarily the Lions doing more to win. Now, at the end of the day, it's an NFL game, right? It's hard to win an NFL game. You have to do a lot of things good to win an NFL game. That being said, I think Tom and Cameron probably could have gone into that NFL game and caught a couple more of those passes than the Chiefs did. So,
especially Kadarius Toney.
Frustrating night for Patrick Mahomes, but to go into Arrowhead and beat the Chiefs at home, I have always said this. I'll probably say it later when we're talking Lions, Seahawks against each other. I have such a hard time picking teams to go into another team's home stadium at the home opener and beat them, let alone the Super Bowl champions. Obviously, Travis Kelce helped out the situation a little bit by not being in the game, but the Lions hype is real. I mean, I can't imagine what that feels like over in Detroit. I can't remember any time in my life where the Lions have had this kind of attention, this kind of hype, this kind of prediction from the professional world to be a good division contending, playoff contending football team. And these two, by the way, the Seahawks and the Lions, they went at each other last year.
Oh, yeah.
So this should be an exciting game, especially with the disappointment that the Seahawks showed last week.
Excuse me. Oh, yes, you got it. I mean, like I had been saying, they didn't play their best game, and the Chiefs made some critical errors that Detroit capitalized on. But adding to your point is that, geez, I've been watching this team since before the 0-16 season of 2008. And a lot of my younger years, you have this delusional, I guess, hype that you think that Detroit's a way better team than they actually were over the years, especially the Jim Schwartz years after the playoff year of 2010, I believe it was. And so it sort of feels unreal, to be honest. And I kind of have the same feeling as when the Lions beat the Patriots in 2018 after Matt Patricia took over. It's like, wait a minute, that just happened? I mean, it's a great feeling, and I hope that this lasts throughout the year, and a lot of people are expecting it to last throughout the year. And so what I have to say to a lot of Lions fans, including myself, is don't take it for granted. There's a lot of parity in the NFL. I mean, look at the Seahawks last year. I mean, they got rid of Russell Wilson in a trade. Nobody expected them to make the playoffs, but Geno Smith, like you said, played the year of his life and made the playoffs because of course, partially because the Lions beat the Packers in the last week, but the Seahawks beat the Lions, and that's kind of what we're going next point is that the Seahawks have had the Lions' numbers since, geez, before the LOB. So transitioning, talk about your Seahawks. I mean, that was a very disappointing loss to a Los Angeles Rams that half of them referred to Matthew Stafford as Sir before first week. I'm sure you've seen that report.
Yeah, your guys' old friend Matthew Stafford. And this is it's funny you bring up, the Lions always or the Seahawks have had the Lions number. The Rams have the Seahawks number. It doesn't matter. I was talking about this the before the game. I was predicting Seattle to win just because I'm on board with the offense that Pete Carroll has put together this year. But the Lions, I was telling everybody, the Lions play the Seahawks tough. Every team has that divisional team that just doesn't seem to go away, no matter how good they are.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, John Wolford went crazy against the Seahawks one time. So the Rams are just that team for Seattle. And so I was saying, hey, this game is going to be close. And for whatever reason, and I'm not underselling Seattle's disappointment. I'll get to that in a second. But for whatever reason, to me, that makes no sense. The world slept on Matthew Stafford over this past offseason in a way that it's just bizarre to me. This
Yes.
week happened to be his 58th 300 passing yard game of his career or something like that. He's one of the all-time great passers. And with him back in the lineup, I mean, you guys saw it with the Lions for years. Injured players or not, you got Matthew Stafford in the game, you're going to have a good passing output. And so the Rams may be a little bit more real than the world gave them credit for throughout this offseason. They had some really young players catch the ball really well. But in terms of the Seahawks, they're just a very oddly unhealthy team at this point. And so, yeah, it was disappointing. It was, the whole world has been expecting DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Kenneth Walker, Geno Smith, they're all going to be on the field at the same time, including me. How do you deal with that? And in reality, Jaxon Smith-Njigba comes off a broken wrist. He had surgery for a broken wrist. His whole hand was wrapped up still in a cast. I didn't realize that that was going to be the situation. When I saw him on the sideline on the broadcast and his whole hand was still in a full-on cast, I was like, well, he's a wide receiver. That's okay for linemen to do sometimes or whatever, but how does a wide receiver catch a pass with his hand wrapped up like that? He still made a couple plays, but Seattle loses two of their rookie left tackles from last year. They lose them both by the third quarter. Tyler Lockett got hurt for a little bit. It just seemed like whatever Seattle had going on was gonna, was destined to fail at some point. So it was just a really odd game, and it was disappointing. And I still, there's always overreactions in week one.
Oh, yes,
Pete
definitely.
Carroll has always been a coach that gets a team to peak at the end. Seattle is always a team that in the first 6 to 7 weeks, you're like, I don't know, man. And then somehow they get better at the end. So their defense is concerning right now, especially with the health issues over there too. But I'm concerned for the Seahawks going to Detroit this week.
Yeah, I'm sure you've seen the memes already throughout the week. I believe Mina Kimes actually was talking about it too. Seattle without their two their like you were saying, they're two defensive guys, and there's a picture of Aiden Hutchinson.
Yeah, yeah. Jess, I've got it down on my notepad right here. You wanted to know keys to the game. Aiden Hutchinson's got, like, fireworks and stuff blowing up around him on my paper.
Yeah, so it's gonna definitely be a wake-up call to Seattle's defensive line. So, in fact, where you might need some of Seattle's best to watch this game if you're out there at 10 a.m. on the West Coast. That's another thing, too, is that West Coast, I'll have you talk about that a little bit as well. West Coast teams coming to the East Coast and playing at 10 a.m. their time. It's definitely a body clock shift, per se.
Yeah, you know, what's kind of strange is that Seattle has this reputation for their home field advantage, which, you know, I have no problem with that. It's very real. And during the Legion of Boom years, it was nearly impossible to go to Lumen Field, no matter who you were, and win a game. In recent memory, like in the last 3 or 4 years, Seattle historically is actually a better road team. They actually do better flying to the East Coast and playing over on that side of the country than at home. Which is kind of a bizarre situation to think about when you think about the home stadium that they have. It's designed to be loud and designed to be a hard place to play, and their reputation for home field advantage. So I'll be interested to see it. I don't know if it's just because they get away from home and they get away from distractions and it's all business ahead that they do better. But historically, in recent memory, they do. So I actually feel a little more comfort that they're playing this game on the road than they would be playing in Seattle.
But also the thing is, Ford Field is going to be loud and proud. And
absolutely. Yeah. I like I said, we'll get to scores later. I'm not predicting Seattle to win this game. Like I said earlier, I have a very hard time picking any team to go to a home opener and win it. Like to go on the road to a home opener and win it. Let alone when you have a team that hasn't had this kind of support and hype for, you know, my whole life. I'm so excited to see what the Lions crowd is going to look like. The excitement that's going to be, it's going to give off the vibes that the Jets fans gave off this week. And hopefully it doesn't end that way that it did for the Jets, but I'm excited to see the broadcast because I want to see the crowd. I want to see the Lions, One Pride, they call it, right?
Yep, that's the hashtag, One Pride. It's going to be crazy down at Ford Field. So, of course, moving to the game preview, we can go to keys to the game. For like you had said, first off, you got Aiden Hutchinson and a lot of stars by it because that man, and I've been very lucky to watch him as a Michigan fan too. Aiden Hutchinson has not only done his job, but he has been just a stud in his entire career so far. Tell me about it from an outside perspective.
Yeah, so Aiden Hutchinson is the biggest reason that I fear for Seattle in this game because their left tackle and their right tackle are both still injured. You know, it's 10 a.m. over here on the West Coast, so we're going to wait for another injury report from Seattle, but it's not looking great for Lucas. Charles Cross is obviously still dealing with some stuff, and Seattle's kind of still just getting into the swing of things. Whenever you have this kind of star power on offense, it takes a little bit of time to mesh it all together, you know? So Jackson Smith and Jigba, while a rookie, is a very electric player. We saw that at Ohio State. Dude went for like 300 receiving yards in a Rose Bowl, something like that, something crazy. So I think they're still gelling that together. But Aiden Hutchinson is my biggest concern because Seattle, the last couple of years, the offensive line has not been impressive. And now you remove two tackles where Aiden Hutchinson is going to be attacking from. He was a beast against the Chiefs. Like, he was an absolute terror against the Chiefs. He'll throw two spins on you in one play and get around you, make you look like a fool on film. So a little concerned about that. I know that the Lions got some O-line stuff going on a little bit too. I think Decker's got something going on.
Yeah.
But and Seattle's also going to be adding some pieces into that defense. It looks like Devin Witherspoon is going to play, so there'll be another rookie out there on the defense for Seattle. So I think this game really could be won in the trenches. And if that's the case, I'm going to have to side with Lions.
There you go. So I just pulled up an injury report so far for week two for Detroit. Taylor Decker with an ankle injury did not practice yesterday. Khalil Dorsey with an illness, did not practice. Emmanuel Mosley with a knee and hamstring, did not practice. But Frank Ragnow Was a full practice on Wednesday. No reports yet as far as Thursday goes, but I would probably expect Ragnow to play, but the other three, I have my doubts. So that goes for that. So yes, Hutchinson, I mean, without Seattle's two defensive guys there on the left side, it's easy to say that Hutchinson could have a field day, but you know, it's next man up, and that's what the Chiefs did, of course, with Travis Kelce being gone. They almost beat Detroit. So just because it's one, there's something out there that's saying, hey, this guy is gonna ball today, doesn't necessarily mean that, because like we had said, this is the NFL. So any given Sunday could happen. So key to the game, of course.
And Seattle does still have an offense, right, that's very capable of getting the ball out fast. You know, if Jackson Smith and Jigba is a little healthier this week, DK Metcalf did have the touchdown last week, but at the end of the game, he got really frustrated, shoved the player down, back. You know, that wasn't a cool moment for anybody. Tyler Lockett didn't essentially play in the third quarter at all, as he was dealing with some sort of, you know, he sat down for a little bit, got up and came back into the game. But, you know, if you're looking at Seattle, how do you beat the Lions? How do you beat Aiden Hutchinson? I think one, get the ball out fast, get those receivers in space instead of trying to take so many deep shots. And then last week, Seattle, one, couldn't get off the field defensively on third down, but couldn't convert on third down offensively, taking a lot of deep shots. And Kenton Walker, I think the big key for me, if Seattle wants to win this game, is keep the ball in Ken Walker's hands. And last week, he had 8 carries in the first half. Seattle was moving the ball offensively, and then he only touched the ball 4 times in the second half, and Seattle's offense completely stalled. And Ken Walker had some big moments against the Lions last year, you know. So I think Ken Walker is the big guy. I guess the big question for me is it going to be 48-45 again? I don't think so.
No, I think Detroit's defense is going to be a little bit better than that, because honestly, despite Detroit's defense finishing still in the bottom 12 of the NFL last year, you got to just take out weeks 1 through 4. You got to look at after the bye, because I'm sure, and you probably watched that game too, before Seattle's game when Detroit played Dallas in week 6. That defense came to play. Now, of course, Detroit did not win that game against the Dallas Cowboys, but you could see then, after Dan Campbell fired the special teams coordinator at the bye week, that defense was going to be there to play. And I think that this year, so far, it started definitely different, as they held Kansas City, which is a team that's notorious for scoring in the 30s and the 40s, to 20. So I don't necessarily see a 48-45 game, and if not, some crazy things are going to have to happen. But yes, that what's scary about Seattle's offense, and you've said it a couple times now, is that they do have, and thankfully maybe Kelly in Vegas can't say his name, but we can say his name, Jackson Smith and Ajigba. I'm sure you've seen some of Kelly in Vegas, which Kelly in Vegas is a friend of mine. Her Seattle preview, I'm not going to even pronounce his last name. Well, we've done it a few times. So Jackson Smith and Ajigba, or Smith and Ajigba. There you go, KIV. So that's, but in all seriousness, it's scary that they have that wide receiver tandem. DK Metcalf, who's always prone for a long touchdown. Tyler Lockett, which if you're a fantasy owner, you love to see him have long touchdowns, especially if you draft him in DraftKings. Now, he was hurt in the third quarter, but you've got that 3 wide receiver tandem that Geno Smith can pick from, and that's going to present a tough day for Detroit's secondary. Now, Detroit's secondary did all right against Kansas City, but also Patrick Mahomes found a zillion different receivers. So maybe that could be the name of the game, is can Geno Smith find receivers in the double digits rather than just Lockett, Metcalf, and Smith and Ajigba?
Yeah, I mean, I think that'll be – you look back and see that Seattle had an off day. You know, is Seattle going to have 2 off days in a row with that wide receiver tandem? I don't think so, especially with the leadership of Bobby Wagner back. Bobby Wagner provides a different sense of move on to the next game. He has so much experience with, you know, such a great iconic defense in the Legion of Boom with Seattle. And, you know, he's there for 10 years, went and played for the Rams for a year and came back. But Seattle's also going to get a little bit of a, I think, a morale jolt I think that this is the perfect week that Jamal Adams returns to practice. He's not going to play in the game, I don't imagine at all, because he's coming off that quad injury in week one last year, a game that I covered, by the way, the Seahawks-Broncos game. Jamal Adams tears his quad like just a couple plays into the game, it felt like, and he missed an entire year, but he's back on the practice field as of yesterday. So I think Seattle will get a little bit of a personal morale jolt there. And like I said, Devin Witherspoon coming back from injury, the rookie that they've been really looking forward to. So Seattle, I think, will bounce back. Pete Carroll's been really good at getting Seattle to bounce back. The concern for me is the offensive line. Does Geno even have time to go find those receivers? Because Seattle likes to take the deep shot. And the other thing that concerns me for Seattle is over on the defensive side of the ball, Seattle is has always been, under Pete Carroll, a bend don't break style defense. And this is something that really plagued them last week, giving up 8-9 yards of play on the pass, you know, right cut right through the middle. And so that bend don't break style defense worked for the Legion of Boom because they could really scrunch down the field once you got inside the 20, and they had such talented playmakers in each zone of the field. Each guy could get their hand on the ball. They don't necessarily have that anymore. They have a lot of rookie and sophomore DBs. Reek Woolen obviously is one that stands out. But if you're the Lions, you have to look at that bend don't break style defense and think, let's not go for the big play. Let's just chunk them 10 yards at a time until we find ourselves down inside the 20, and then take advantage of the opportunities when we get there.
There you go. Last question before our score predictions. Thoughts on Seattle signing Jason Peters?
You know, I don't have many. I mean, I'm to the point with this Seahawks team that I'm in a spot where I know that this is going to be really, really weird for a little bit. Like, it's going to depend on, you know, and it's a cool thing. You know, I mean, he's a veteran guy. I'm not saying, you know, who cares? You know, I'm just to the point now where Seattle has, you know, some really important veteran leaders on the team as they stand. And I'm comfortable with the fact that this is going to be a strange year. Jamal Adams not going to get back in there for a little while. Obviously, the tackles health situation is going to be a little bit of a thing for a little while. And then as you go down a schedule in the NFL, other players are going to get banged up at some point. No team makes it to week 18 healthy. Or 100% healthy, that is, you know. So
right.
I'm very comfortable with this team's going to look kind of strange at the beginning. I don't think we're going to get a true sense of who the Seahawks actually are until they go through that gauntlet of the schedule that they go through at the end, where they play like 3 games in 11 days or something like that. So it will be wild, but Pete Carroll makes some peak at the end. And so, you know, the reporter in me tells me, just wait until it gets to the end. And then the fan in me tells me, okay, I've seen Pete start with a rocky ship at first and then make it sail at the end.
So it makes me think of a twisted Ron Burgundy quote, the Seattle Seahawks?
yeah, exactly. And well, you see, the thing that's kind of problematic or troublesome for Seattle in that sense is that they have the San Francisco 49ers in their division. So they don't really have time to figure themselves out, right? They have to, I mean, San Francisco last week looked like a juggernaut that we all expected them to be. So Seattle doesn't really have time to find themselves. They got to go do it right now, and they've already given up a divisional game. But, you know, history repeats itself, and history says that Pete Carroll will get his team to peak at the end.
There you have it. So, how do you think this game is going to go come 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon your time?
Well, I have a hard time picking. I would have a really hard time picking Seattle. As much as I want them to win and I'll be rooting for them to win, I'm not going to go on record saying that they're going to win against a Detroit Lions team in their home opener, especially with how last week went for both teams. So I'm going to say the Lions are going to win it. It's going to be another close one because, like you said, Seattle really tends to perform over there in Detroit, and I don't think that Seattle is going to have as bad of a day as they had against the Rams twice in a row. But it is going to be close, but I'm going to say the Lions are going to win it, I think, probably 31-23.
31-23. You've got Detroit winning. I think Detroit is going to win as well. Now, last week, if you may or may not have listened to my my Lions 53-man roster preview, I was saying that this team was going to start 0-2 because of, like you had said, history. Because Seattle had had Detroit's number ever since CLOB. Well, this is different now that they've beaten the Chiefs. That crowd is going to be loud. It's going to be proud. I don't necessarily expect for it to be a beatdown because Seattle, like we had said, has got the three wide receiver core, a bend-don't-break defense. So I'm going to say Detroit 27, Seattle 13. I think they're going to hold Seattle lows. It's going to be a little bit lower scoring than perhaps the over might suggest, but it's going to be something like maybe even Seattle will have a 10-7 lead at the half, kind of like if you maybe think back to the Lions' first Monday night game in umpteen years back in 2010, I think it was, where Chicago actually had a 14-10 lead at half, I believe, and then Detroit just ran the table on them in the second half. And that's what I think is going to happen this time, is that first half will be competitive. Maybe Seattle holds a 10-7 lead at the half, and then Detroit runs away 27-13, I think, is going to be your final score. Detroit wins this game. So, with that said,
don't kill me, everybody in the Pacific Northwest that listens, and I predicted the Seahawks to lose this game. It's a business first mentality.
Exactly. And if you still want to listen to the Sunday Night Reports with Cameron Derby, I would suggest you not go after him if Detroit happens to beat Seattle, because Eugene needs their sports reports from Mr. Cameron Derby. That's for sure.
Appreciate that.
You bet. So moving to our pick'ems. Again, this is I do this every football week. Knowledge of each team is not completely necessary. Just give me your picks and any analysis you got. First, we got a battle, perhaps a Mike Leach tribute, LSU and Mississippi State, as it's the Bulldogs' first game at home since Mike Leach's passing.
Yeah. First of all, we have a lot of history with Mike Leach over on this side of the country, because Wazoo. He spent so much time with Washington State. So there's a lot of people in our newsroom that are Washington State alums that were just devastated when Mike passed away. So mm-hmm. It's cool to see him get the kind of tributes. He's always just the funniest. One thing you can always count on with Mike Leach is just a funny soundbite whenever you needed it. I think my favorite thing I ever heard from him was the wedding advice. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but that's just one of the...
You can tell from every reaction I have.
All the time to this day, you know.
First of all, it's too late.
I don't care. Yeah. He says you should have asked me a long time ago for advice about this.
Yes.
Mike Leach, a good dude. I'm happy that he's getting the tribute he's going to get. I don't think that his team is going to win this game. Mississippi State struggled with Jaden Delora, Arizona, last week. Jaden Delora, not necessarily throwing the ball, but his mobility. Mm-hmm. Jaden Delora, very talented guy. You know, he'll have those days, and then the next week he'll have a game that makes you go, gosh, what is going on? But anyways, they're running a little tougher, but LSU got momentum back after it looked like the world was probably ready to hit panic button after Florida State, you know? But LSU got a little momentum back, and I think that that's the key here. While they didn't play a tough team in any sense of the word, they got their confidence back, I think, last week, and that's why I'm going to take LSU in this game.
Yeah, heart wants to go Mississippi State because of the tributes and whatnot, but head wants to go LSU because, well, one, I'm friends with Megan Making Money as well, Barstool Sports, so she'll probably want to come on the show and say something if I don't pick LSU. Give me LSU by a field goal. It's going to be but it's going to be dramatic, and there will probably not be a dry eye in that stadium thinking about Mike Leach and his impact on not only Mississippi State, but, of course, Texas Tech as well as Wazoo. So moving from Megan Making Money to Kelly and Vegas' team, K-State and Mizzou. Rolling with the Barstool theme here. Not intended anyway. It just came out to be this way. K-State, Mizzou.
Kansas State defense wins championships, right? I think they've only allowed 38 yards per game on the ground, I want to say. Don't quote me on that set. Sure. Something along those lines. They're like fifth in the nation for tackles for loss. And they have a good scoring defense too. And then, you know, you look at Will Howard. tied for the most points responsible for in the entire country, I think, to this point. So Kansas State has been on an offensive roll too.
Mm-hmm.
They've been scoring 40 points. It feels like every, 40 or more. It feels like every time I talk about Kansas State, I'm talking about they scored 40 points last week. I think dating back to last regular season, four or five games straight, I think that they've scored over 40.
Mm-hmm.
Give me Kansas State. I think there's just too much firepower there.
Yeah, Kansas State, I think, reigning big, don't quote me on this, but Big 12 champs, I think, at least, Kansas State. Give me Kansas State in this game by two scores. Mizzou just hasn't impressed me at all so far this season. Big 10 ACC challenge, but on the gridiron, not the hardwood. Minnesota, UNC.
We got two fighting ideologies here, right? I mean, yeah. Drake May and that speed. And then are the Gophers going to try and just slow this thing down as much as they possibly can and just keep UNC from getting into any sort of offensive rhythm? The problem with that is that Minnesota struggled really hard to run the ball against Nebraska. So that stands out on paper as like, that's a big problem when you're struggling to run against some teams that have been very poor in the last 20 years. How are you going to do it against a really good team? And USC or UNC, excuse me, they're kind of confusing too, because they look like a defensive juggernaut in the first game of the year. And then they flip around and they go to overtime with Appalachian State. They give up like 219 yards on the ground, something like that. So around 220. And like I said, it had to go to overtime. But if there was going to be a week to upset North Carolina, I think it was going to be last week, and the opportunity was missed. Give me UNC this week.
There you go. So, Minnesota, you, like you had said, two fighting ideologies. Minnesota slow the ball down, but when you don't have Mo Ibrahim, that kind of messes with your running game there. So, give me UNC here. I think that, you score a lot of points, and kind of like Loyola Marymount back in the 90s, where they just scored and scored and scored and scored and scored. Can UNC play some defense? And on this type of, against a Minnesota team that has struggled offensively, I would say yes, give me UNC. So,
it doesn't feel like the week for upsets, does it?
No, not necessarily.
This week is kind of bland.
Definitely. So, last one on the college slate, Tennessee and Florida.
All right, Tennessee and Florida. This is where things can get a little interesting, right? Because Florida, as bad as the world has kind of made it out that Florida looked against Utah at Rice-Eccles, I don't think they looked as bad as the world gave them credit for. 270 yards allowed to Utah. Graham Mertz is like 75% completion at this. Or I got stumbled up in my words. He's completed like 75% of his passes this year. If the ball comes out of the guy's arms, someone catches it. And so this is going to be not at Rice-Eccles, right? This is going to be in the swamp. This is going to be in a completely different environment. Tennessee, great defense so far this year. They lead the nation in sacks and tackles for loss. I think they can get in the backfield and really rough you up. That being said, Austin Peay is not Florida. There's a difference between the two programs. There's a difference between the two environments. And while Joe Milton has played, is also completing a high percentage for Tennessee, if there's going to be an upset this week, I think it's going to happen in the swamp. Give me the Gators.
There you go. 1 second.
Recording stopped.
Because I'm on a 40-minute time limit, I will send you a new Zoom. So hold on a couple minutes.
Sounds good.
My pick. I'll go ahead and pick, here's where we'll be contrarian. I'll go Tennessee here. I know that Josh Heupel's team isn't quite where Georgia and Alabama are at yet, but they beat Alabama last year. So this could be a sign of things to come for the Tennessee Volunteers. Joe Milton, of course, the former Michigan man, playing decently at quarterback. It's a hard pick 'em, but I'm going to say Tennessee. He says an upset in Florida, so we'll go contrarian there. So no worries there. Moving to the NFL slate, with it, I pick usually games within 2.5, and if we don't have enough of those games, I'll go Sunday night, Monday night. Again, just straight up. Green Bay and Atlanta, a little bit different than a few years ago on Monday night when everybody thought Green Bay was going to destroy Atlanta, and they sort of did. So Green Bay and Atlanta.
Yeah, Green Bay came out and played a bit better than everybody expected them to, especially the Chicago Bears fan base didn't expect that to go the way that it went. Obviously, Justin Fields played okay, but Jordan Love played phenomenal.
Yes.
And that's why I'm going to side with Green Bay here. To me, it comes down to Jordan Love and Desmond Ridder. And if I have to pick between the two, I'm going to take Jordan Love. Based on last week, I'll go with the Packers.
Yeah, on that, I was looking at this NFC South before the season started, and I thought, good God, Saints by default? Because I don't know who else is better than them. Now, Tampa Bay made a bit of a statement last week, and we'll talk about them here in a few minutes. But Atlanta, yeah, when you're talking about Jordan Love, a guy that sat behind Aaron Rodgers for two or three seasons at least, and Atlanta, Desmond Ridder, okay, took Cincinnati to a playoff, but what has he done in the NFL? Not much. And a buddy of mine and I have this provision about Atlanta when they hired Arthur Smith. Oh, the Falcons hired a new coach. All righty. Well, what's his name? Arthur Smith. Oh. And that's kind of what we're thinking of the Falcons. Jordan Love? Okay. Not sure if he's going to be a 20-year quarterback like Aaron Rodgers looks to be. But something that at least get him from point A to point B. Atlanta, Desmond Ridder. Oh. So that's kind of what we're thinking about the Atlanta Falcons. And next week will be a little bit different once we talk about them against the Detroit Lions. But, yeah, give me the Packers this week. It pains me to say because even without Rodgers, I still cannot stand Green Bay. In fact, it still kind of pains me that they beat Chicago this week. So, Green Bay 24, Atlanta 14. Green Bay still looks like Matt LaFleur still knows what he's doing and still got it rolling. So give me Green Bay by 10. AFC South divisional matchup in Indy and Houston.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting, right? Because Anthony Richardson showed some of the big game flash that we expected out of him. And for some of that game, you showed a little bit of what it means to be a rookie quarterback, you know. So this game right here, I think what it comes down to for me is that the Colts are just more in a position to be an okay team this year than Houston is. And it's going to be fun to watch Richardson and C.J. Stroud go at each other. I personally have been saying I think that C.J. Stroud has the most potential to be – the better quarterback of this draft class. I've always been a huge fan of CJ Stroud, but the position that the two teams are in, I got to take the Colts here.
Yeah, CJ Stroud might have a decent year, but Houston, we have a huge problem, and that is, man.
And DeMeco Ryan, you know, great hire, you know, for the Texans, I think. It's just, it takes a long time to dig out of the kind of hole that Houston has been in. And I don't think that week two of the regular season is going to be getting out of that hole.
No, and this is showing me signs of David Carr in the 2002 season when they opened up where it's like, who are these? Who are most of these guys? Now, of course, we know CJ Stroud, of course, from Ohio State. I'm glad that Michigan beat him twice. I'm always grateful for that, but the Colts have had their problems, especially when Jim Irsay is more interested in paying a whale than he is than paying Jonathan Taylor. Not sure where that went, but give me the Colts here by 7, 27-20. I think Houston does score some points. I think Nico Collins finds the end zone once. I think Anthony Richardson finds the end zone once through the air and once on the ground. But this, with good matchups come crap matchups in your pick-ems when you have that close of a spread. And this was one of those crap matchups, so unfortunately to say. So moving to Raymond James Stadium, Chicago and Tampa Bay.
Yeah, the Bucks, you said it yourself. They made a statement last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of the Baker Mayfield experience, right? One or two games at the very beginning that are like, whoa. And then 6 weeks of, okay, what's going on now? You know, and then Baker's kind of one of those people that really seems to rely on the world coming down on him. And then, you know, when he gets backed into a corner, he has one of these games where you're like, gosh, you know, the flash is there. You can see it there. Can it consistently be there? Tampa goes and beats a Minnesota Vikings team that maybe a little suspect this year, like last year. You know, it was week one. We saw some weirder things happen in week one than the Vikings struggle against the Bucs. But I think the bigger key here is the way Chicago struggled against the Green Bay team that we expected to not be the Green Bay team of the past 20 years. Or even of the past 40 years, looking at how long the Packers had Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre combined.
Oh, yes.
So give me the Buccaneers over the Bears. The Bears just didn't show me enough last week, and the Buccaneers showed me just that little bit extra. You know, Baker Mayfield was able to put the team on his back in situations, run it on third down for first down, make a key throw when he needed to make it. I'm going to trust Baker Mayfield a little bit more than I trust the Bears right now.
Yeah, as far as the Bucs go, the Tom Brady effect is real because there are a lot of pieces that are no longer on that team, plus 6,000 seats that are no longer at Raymond James Stadium because Tom Brady is no longer a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. That said, Baker Mayfield is not a bad quarterback. I mean, like you had said, he had that whoa week, and so I'm making a lot of people say, Jesus, Tony. I had to make that reference out there. Jesus, Tony. That's what's making a lot of people say in the NFC South. But that said, Chicago, it's more of a Tampa. I'm still not a huge believer in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but I also think very low of the Chicago Bears because I thought that Justin Fields was going to ball. I thought that the defense was starting to become the defense of old, not necessarily 85 old, but the defense of like the first and second year of Matt Nagy's coaching career. That type of defense. I did not see that at all. I saw Jordan Love ball out. I saw Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon ball out. I saw a lot different than that. So I'm going to say Tampa by 7. Let's go 17-10. I think that there's not going to be a lot of points scored in this game, but I think Baker is going to throw for about 300 yards, and Mike Evans will find the end zone once. As far as Chicago goes, I think Justin Fields finds the end zone once with his legs. Moving to Monday night, Cleveland and Pittsburgh.
All right. The Cleveland Browns had the hype for the last, you know, several years and didn't live up to it. Now they don't necessarily have the hype and they're living up to it a little bit, I think. Pittsburgh, take that what happened last week with a grain of salt. They played against the San Francisco 49ers. I'm not a believer in the Pittsburgh Steelers this year the way that, you know, a lot of people are. Pittsburgh has such a history of being consistently good, consistently over above 500 team. But they got blown out. They looked like they didn't know what was going on against the San Francisco 49ers. And that's because even if you're playing against a team like San Francisco, that's a hard thing to – it's a hard pill to swallow to be down that big, that fast in week one. You know, week one is the week that every team should just be so hyped to play and ready to play and engaged to play. You've been thinking about this one team for, you know, a longer period of time than you get to throughout the rest of the regular season, and you lay an egg the way that the Pittsburgh Steelers laid an egg. Cleveland, on the other hand, beat Joe Burrow. The conditions of the game were just atrocious, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I think a lot of people looked at Joe Burrow's week and went, what happened to Joe Burrow? But, you know, they just checked the box score. They just checked the fantasy points. They didn't watch a highlight. And they didn't go, oh, the Bengals were trying to put a different glove on Joe Burrow's hand like every possession because he couldn't physically get a grip on the ball, you know, to throw it. The Browns were able to overcome that environment much better than the Bengals were. And so, you know, because of Cleveland's ability to kind of move with the conditions a little bit, they got Deshaun Watson running the ball. As much as I haven't been a believer in the Browns, In the past, I'm a believer in the Browns. This week, give me Cleveland over Pittsburgh.
This one's a tough game to pick because, one, you have a divisional rivalry, of course, with Cleveland and Pittsburgh. But also, like you had said, the conditions really helped Cleveland in that spot because Joe Burrow couldn't hold on to a football, literally, because of the rain. In fact, I've played a couple of tournaments here locally where I'm at where it was raining so hard. And because it was one of those not necessarily charity, but one of those tournaments where you've got so many guys out here, it's going to be too tough to reschedule. They just had you play in the rain, and it's like, I can't even get a grip on my driver. Come on. That's kind of what's going on here with Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals there in that first week. But moving back to Cleveland, they finally have stability in some sort at quarterback with Deshaun Watson. Of course, we're going to save the talk of what happened between the lines for another day, but Deshaun Watson at quarterback, their running game is still there. And Pittsburgh just got blown out. I mean, San Francisco is a team that, and I will say it now that even if Detroit were to have made the playoffs last year, I think they would have suffered a very similar fate that Seattle did because they would have had to play San Francisco. And I think San Francisco was on a mission. If Brock Purdy was not hurt against the Eagles, I think San Francisco makes and possibly wins a Super Bowl. They were that dominant. They just lost their quarterback, and that screwed them over. As far as this game goes, give me Cleveland by a field goal. I think it's going to be a lot closer than people think. I think Pittsburgh is a little bit better than what week one says. I still think Pittsburgh finishes 9-8 because Mike Tomlin, but I think Cleveland may very well be the real deal. And this is where they showcase that on Monday night.
Has there been a harder week two pick 'em ever? This is one of the most bizarre week ones that I've ever seen, you know, because yes. Like after the Jets Bills game, I had so many people texting me, what's wrong with Josh Allen? What's going on with Josh Allen? And I said, you know, as hard of a game as it was for Josh Allen, you know what else we saw this week? We saw the Chiefs lose at home. We saw the Vikings lose in week one. We saw the Giants get absolutely destroyed by the Dallas Cowboys. Like, we all turned that game off in the first quarter. We saw a Seahawks team that was supposed to have one of the best offenses in the game look bland and stale. You know, like, we saw some really bizarre things happen in week one. So hold the overreactions. Let's see a week two.
Exactly. Good deal. So, and now the bonus game. I picked the highest spread. Usually it's either the number one team or the highest spread team if it's not Michigan, which I've said it before, Michigan is one of the toughest teams to bet against the spread. But anyway, it's kind of fitting that this ends up the game that because the team you're covering, and that is the Oregon Ducks facing the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors. The spread is 37.5 when I had texted it out. Will Oregon cover 37.5 against Hawaii?
This is a fun conversation. There's a couple of reporters in our newsroom last week. I think the spread for Stanford USC was USC favored by 40, something like that. And I was telling them, you know, my buddy was thinking about betting on the spread, and I was, you know, don't bet on a 40-point spread, no matter the team. That's crazy, you know? And so he went against my word, and he won money because Stanford won the game like 55 to something, or I think they had 50 points at halftime. But I do stand my ground. It's hard to bet any team in any conditions to bet a spread of, you know, 40-plus is just crazy. Here's what's interesting about the Ducks and the Rainbow Warriors is that, excuse me, Oregon scored 81 points against Portland State at Autzen Stadium a couple weeks ago.
I'm surprised that the Ducks' arms are still intact, how many push-ups he had to do.
Yeah, 546 that day. They go on the road, they struggle a little bit with Texas Tech in a really harsh environment and get a win at the end. Now, here's the reason why I don't necessarily think the spread is the place to go here. And maybe the over instead is Oregon. The reason, you know, their downfall in the last couple of years has been their secondary. And that was a little bit evident last week. They had some costly pass interference penalties and, you know, struggled to hold Tyler Shuck's mobility in check. and a former Oregon quarterback, by the way, in Tyler Shuck. And the Rainbow Warriors are a very pass heavy team. I think that their leading rusher has 11 carries through 2 weeks. They throw the ball with Braden Shager a lot. I think I've got his stats up right here. In 2023, he is 80 of 128 for 972 yards, 10 touchdowns. And he's also thrown 5 interceptions. Maybe that plays in the Ducks' favor a little bit. Long story short, they've thrown the ball 128 times.
64 a game. Yeah.
They throw the ball. And so when you look at a secondary like Oregon's that's still trying to settle down and gel a little bit and has been a problematic position group for the Ducks in the last couple of years, the Rainbow Warriors, I think, for at least a half, have the potential to move the ball down the field, which could create some problems for the Ducks, creating separation there, at least early in the game. So I would veer away from the spread here and maybe go with the overscoring total instead.
I got to pick up my arm because of how many times the Hawaii has thrown the ball. 128 times? I mean,
okay, yes, good. The Rainbow Warriors are an air raid at its very definition. You look up air raid in the dictionary and you see the Hawaii Rainbow Warrior logo.
No kidding. I mean, 128 times in two games. Thankfully, my arm is glued back on, so I'm all right. But, yeah, that's Matthew Stafford, Detroit Lions, Jim Schwartz-type stats where they were an air raid team that Stafford even threw some timely picks. So, yeah, 37.5 is tough to cover. I think last week I had Georgia and Ball State, and I did not pick Georgia to cover. And I believe that hit. So I am going to go ahead and say Hawaii plus 37.5. I still think it's going to be like 55-17 or something like that, to where it'll be real respectable. That's 38. Oh, yeah. 55-17.
We'll be a blowout. We'll be a blowout for
sure. Yeah, 55-17 is 38.
I just don't know that I trust Oregon to get away. Yeah, that early.
Right. So thinking about a 55-17 makes 38 on the nose, so you'd lose by the hook if you went Oregon minus 37.5. So give me Hawaii on the plus 37.5 on that. So all righty. With all that said, the famed final question of the show, anything else that you may have to add to this wonderful Tom Green podcast for this week?
No, man. Just thanks for having me. Appreciate the chance to talk to you guys about some football over there.
Oh, for
and
sure.
And remember, when you're following me on social media, Cam Derby TV, TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, shameless plug, I will not say a negative thing about the Lions this year because I am a man of my word. The Seahawks fans owe the Lions fans that much. So consider the Seahawks fans and the Lions fans shaking hands this year.
There you go. So we hope he stands true to his word. He is Cameron Derby, and this is in the Lions Seahawks preview of the Tom Green podcast for this week.